All right, let's get started. I know everybody now, so I'm going to introduce myself. And let's start with a moment of prayer. Lord, thank you for bringing us here together today. Please bless us in our discussions about the struggles with dementia and in our own struggles with dementia. And just a couple of things. Welcome audience input, and if we don't get through everything, that would be great, because it meant you talked a lot. The first day we talked about figuring out what dementia is. Hi, Zarko, what day are
you doing?
You good?
Zarko's in the wrong classroom.
No, he knows what goes on in the other one.
Oh, he's here. Oh, I thought you and Carmen were both.
Oh, that's
presented.
Right. She's presenting.
Carmen's doing it, yeah.
The first day we talked about identifying dementia, putting a name to it, and how difficult that is. Yesterday we talked about some of the practical aspects of how you deal with your family, in my case, my father's dementia, taking away the car keys, unplugging the stove, taking care of their finances, taking over a lot of the parts of their life, living wills. Today we're going to talk about emotions, and something I was not prepared for at all is the emotions I've had to deal with Dad having dementia. And luckily, I was invited to be on, or I begged to be on teaching staff here. And so I was able to address some of these things by preparing for this class. And I really don't think I would have done as well if I hadn't prepared these classes, because I wouldn't have gone to the library and gotten books and ordered books and such. Hi. So, I'm going to start out with a story. I told a little bit about it. And we're going to talk about developing our emotional coping skills. How Dad makes me feel. We visited Dad last Christmas. Snowy weather had kept us apart, so we had to catch up on Christmas and news. My wife, two of my daughters, and I drove to his apartment 90 miles away in his assisted living complex. He hadn't managed to get his Christmas checks to us written yet. He quit buying individual gifts a couple of years ago. He asked me to help him. So he was sitting at his little kitchen table that we had when I was a kid, and the kitchen table chair we had when I was a kid, and he was writing these checks, and I was standing behind him. I've already made a mistake. Do you know what the mistake is?
Standing behind him.
Which, of course, I didn't figure out. My wife figured out. He asked me to help. I told him he didn't have to give us each a card. He had a card, and then he put a check in there. We really didn't need it. The check would suffice. He yelled loudly, "Just let me do it my way." I was pretty embarrassed because he doesn't usually yell in front of my kids. I stepped back and let him work. He then yelled at me, "Aren't you going to help me? You're a terrible helper. You're not helping me at all." I said something, but he didn't seem to listen. He kept yelling. I walked a few feet away and made some excuse about needing to get something from his car, from my car. Walked out and cooled off a bit. When I returned, my wife was helping him. He said, "Now, Susan's a good helper. You weren't any help at all." He just stuck that knife in and kept digging it. I felt terrible. I had tears come to my eyes. Why had I bothered to come see this crabby little grump who yells when you try to help? Well, what words come to your mind for that could describe those emotions? There's more than one emotion I felt, I suppose. But what? Anybody?
Frustration.
Surprise.
I was surprised. I didn't see this coming.
Disappointment.
I was disappointed. Here, I thought, gosh, it's Christmas. We're going to get together. We'll have a little more Christmas today, a couple days after Christmas. What was the other one you said?
Embarrassed.
I was very embarrassed.
Sad.
You missed one.
Anger.
It wasn't fair. I came to help and drive all these miles. He didn't care. He starts yelling at me. So there was... I meant to get the flip chart. There's nothing. Well...
There's white one.
We'll remember it. So, anger, embarrassment, surprise... sadness. I had all those emotions. I don't cry very often, but I walked away. Actually, I walked away and looked at the place where he had fallen outside in the smoking area and couldn't get in. And he couldn't get in on a night that was about 10 below zero in Minnesota. And he had tried to tell me it was the fault of the organization, first of all, because they wouldn't let him smoke inside, but he had an idea because there was ice out there, and he thought they should construct a vent that would pump warm air out there 24 hours a day and melt it. He thought that would work great. So we'll keep those emotions on the whiteboard in our head. A couple of months later, I took two days off to help him get to a medical appointment. I just had to do something about all the mail and newspapers that had accumulated. I found a stash of mail dating back 3 months. I told him a couple times, you know, tonight, Dad, we're going to go through that mail. Oh, you don't need to do that. Well, you know, it's a mess. No, it's fine. I know where everything is. You don't have to do it. I have my way of dealing with it. So I told him it had to be done. I went through all the mail. I sat down, and as I opened it up, I picked it up, and I heard the phrase that my sisters and I just read here. What are you doing with that? What is that? I said, Dad, it's a piece of mail. I'm going to open it. No, don't do that. Well, Dad, I have to. I'm going to. And the yelling started again. So I went through all the mail while he sat and yelled at me. He cried. He is just twisting his head back and forth. He didn't used to do it. There's things that are different. And he doesn't look like Dad when he does that. If I walk in when I, maybe I'll walk in and he's reading the paper, he's got his glasses on, he's got his hair combed pretty good. It's like Dad is back, but he was not there then. And he screamed at me. I was worried they would hear it in the next apartment. He continued yelling until he noticed something interesting on the TV, and then he forgot what I was doing. I found $1,500 worth of checks, bills to be paid, and unopened Christmas cards from his family. Eddie said, I said, well, here's a Christmas card. It was from my daughter, Dad. Oh, I don't need to read that. It just says blah, blah, blah. Which usually would have treasured something like that. Later that night, I took his laundry to be done. He yelled at me again because I didn't do it right. I put the sheets in first. I got a certain way of doing that. I stayed up till 11:30, which was way too late for what I had to do the next day. Every time I went down to check the dryer, he went with me. So I felt bad about those issues, but I did pretty well. I didn't really yell back. I just gritted my teeth. So I decided I had to rise above this. I visited him when my sister had been there. We were both there. And she said he had been yelling at her the whole weekend. I was doing pretty good. I was a good cop that weekend. I was keeping calm, and she was at the end of her rope. But my sister is a saint. I just absolutely love her. She doesn't have she didn't do well in school like my other sister and I did. But she's just this easygoing. You can always laugh her out of an argument. If it rains, she finds something fun to do and says she had a good time. She's just a saint. But she was at the end of her rope. So we got in the car, and he said, you know, all weekend, if I say it's raining, she says it's nice. If I sit in one chair, she says sit in the other. And all of a sudden, I found myself yelling at him. And I wanted to be the good cop. All of a sudden, I was the bad cop, and I was yelling at him at the top of my voice. I don't yell at people. I'll yell at my kids. What's happening here? Why did I say that? What does that tell you? I yell at my kids.
Well, he's like a kid now.
My dad's a kid now. So I was yelling at him, and it wasn't fair. She was right. He was wrong. And I told him, you know, you just got to quit picking fights over everything, Dad, and just be quiet and be nice. You should be grateful that Sarah's here. So how did I feel? Again, emotions or statements. He said, any answers for me?
Indignant.
I was indignant. I felt out of control. I felt like a bad parent that couldn't get his child to behave. We've all, Diana, maybe you haven't been there yet. The rest of us have. Circle.
Did you feel like surprised by your anger?
Oh,
like,
yes.
Hey, this is not me. Like,
yeah.
Like all of a sudden you're surprised by who you are becoming?
Yep, I felt terrible about myself.
So now you're embarrassing.
Yeah, I hold it in all the time. That's my job. I can't yell at patients and whatever. I mean, I sometimes tell people what I need to say, but I don't yell at them. That's not a good thing to do. Here's another one. I took him out to eat at this really nice Italian kind of wine bar by his house. He had food on his clothes. He had yesterday's chocolate all over his face. waitress brought him a beer, he said, "Hey, I need something to drink this in, like a glass?" Sarcastic. I wanted to crawl under the table. We were always taught to treat people in public with respect and dignity. If we got the, we're not Norwegian, but we act like it sometimes. We're Minnesotans. If you got the wrong thing, you didn't complain about it, you ate it. Even in a restaurant, you wouldn't send it back, hardly ever. So here he is, sarcastic, mouth kind of hangs open, and food coming out on his face. I don't know, what were the words for how I felt then?
Embarrassed.
Exactly. Another word that goes with that.
We're talking,
yes, shamed. I was ashamed. I felt deep shame. And I was embarrassed to be his son. I hope she thought he was somebody I was taking out as I was a volunteer or something.
Yeah. You were sad too, I suspect.
Yeah, I was more ashamed and embarrassed and mad than I was sad. I didn't want to be there anymore. I hated the smell of that place. I'm doing better with this stuff, which is part of the reason I'm bringing it up. And part of the reason I'm doing better, because I've given it some thought. So the nurse at assisted living called. She said he had been dumping soiled clothing on the floor and we had to do something about it. She said I needed to stop avoiding his dementia and start dealing with it. I mentioned some of these yesterday. So, and I was on call that day. I got all my doctor's stuff on. I look pretty good. I'm ready to raise the dead practically. And I think she's an RN, and she's telling me that I need to start dealing with something. Calls me tough, doesn't call me doctor, of course, which is always okay with me. But how did I feel then? Some other words.
Angry.
I was angry at her. Couldn't she just recognize what I'm doing? What's wrong with her? I didn't want to have a bad day, and that made it into a very bad day. What else? She said I hadn't been treating his dementia well enough.
She's threatening you as a doctor.
Defensive.
You haven't diagnosed what she's...
Yeah, I felt that very much. Does she know I'm a doctor?
Yeah. Who is she?
Who is she?
Both nurses.
I usually treat nurses as colleagues, but I doesn't mean I want to be yelled at. I felt guilty. I've learned that when people attack you, most of the time there's something behind it. They might be 99% wrong, they're rarely 100% wrong. And so I think it's partly, mostly because I'm a Christian. I turn the other cheek and, well, is there anything of merit? And yeah, there is some merit. I am not facing this head on. So I felt guilty. Any other thoughts on that?
Were you a little shocked?
Yeah, I didn't expect this from her. She's very warm. She calls him honey. She pats his cheek, smooths his hair. And here she was letting me have it with a couple of barrels.
It sounds like to me that you had, or maybe have, a lot of expectations about the way things should be, and they're not going the way that they should go. Does that fit?
Mac, I meant to pay you before. This is out of order, but let's take Mac's outstanding point there. Anger is usually generated by... Can you see it now?
Yeah.
Usually generated by our insistence that the world and its inhabitants conform to our expectations. And you had that word, expectations. We can damp down our anger by giving up these unrealistic demands. And we expect our parents, and we'll talk about why, we expect them to behave the way they always did. They kind of
the way
the
they should behave.
Yeah.
Not the
now,
way
you know,
they
if Dad
always...
had always been grumpy and sarcastic, it wouldn't have surprised me as much as this really did. And it surprised me.
So also nowadays, a nurse, I would expect the nurse to behave in a very professional manner.
She wasn't unprofessional. Looking back on it, it wasn't out of line at all.
It sounded like an attack to me.
Well, a little bit. I think it was more she's a little rough around the edges, but I think it would have been less professional for her not to say what had to be said.
It's more like a doctor, get your head out of the clouds,
yep.
Pay attention to what's going
yep.
on.
It was more of a tough love kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I've had many talks with her since, and very respectful.
So it should be helpful if you recognize. See myself not recognizing that.
But, you know, it, whatever authority you're given tends to inflate your ego more than it should. Which is why I really want to be captain of the dis team sometimes. So I felt like she didn't think I was a good son or a good doctor. And I haven't, I'm not a doctor, my dad, but I've had at some times, a time or two, especially my sister, say, boy, you're being a good son. Does that feel good? We just don't tell each other enough that we're doing good things. And it, you hear it more here at Holden. I remember the time, you were here, Jean. You remember the sermons one of the young staff gave about the deer eating the garden? And it was terrible. It didn't make any sense at all, and nobody got it. Everybody's kind of complaining about it the next day. And the kid had put a lot of effort in. He was pretty passionate about it. And I went up and said, oh, that was really a good sermon. I hated it too, but I thought he needed to get some positive feedback before that. So we've got these feelings. My feelings were out of control, shame, guilt, anger, surprise, sadness. What can we do with these feelings?
First of all, what did the nurse expect you to do to face it?
She expected me to get him more services, which he didn't want. I didn't get to that part. She said they needed to start doing his laundry. I agreed to that. It started a month-long argument with him. I talked yesterday. He confabulated this meeting where people met with him and laughed about it to his face and made fun of him. And he was going to sue them. He said he would get an attorney and sue all of us. And I was worried that I would, you know, maybe lose control of this. He really doesn't have the wherewithal to get that done. If he was a rational person and these things had kind of happened, you know, maybe it would have been the end of a relationship. So there was, when you worry about the worst case scenario, I was thinking about that and kind of preparing for it and thinking what kind of evidence I would have on my side. Was
so,
that bad?
So if your father is like other people that I've known, you wait a little while, he's going to forget about that.
His dementia isn't so bad that he forgets big things.
Okay.
He forgets some things. And of course, when you have pretty severe dementia, they forget everything.
Right.
How much are you inviting?
How much am I
inviting from your father? For instance, his broker sends him a check and it sits there, and you told us that you had full power of attorney.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like you're inviting that to happen, because why wouldn't you contact the broker and say, send the checks to me?
I would almost
guarantee that he wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah, well.
And he's still diagnosing it. He's not.
Yeah, that's because Marion was
reality.
Right. I wasn't far enough yet. I mean, I had the diagnosis by that point.
Mm-hmm.
We had him up to my hometown and went through the process, but I wasn't facing everything. At home, the last thing was the Discover, his visa bill doesn't have much on it anymore. And I haven't taken that, haven't addressed to my house. We did some of that. A consequence of what happened with this was my sisters and I looked at it very hard and said, can we go on with him that close to one of us? We decided no, and it had to either be my sister in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, or me, and we decided me. And then went on for another battle with him. And now that he's there, he's kind of forgotten that battle, doesn't talk about it. He talks about the day-to-day, whatever it is, is an issue for him. And there aren't too many.
So you figured out a way to work around the battles.
Yeah, but I had to face the battles.
Yeah.
I could have ignored it. And I did ignore it for a while. So now most of our encounters are pretty peaceable. He was trying to convince me he was seeing yellow-winged blackbirds. Do they have those here?
Maybe
they don't. We have red-winged blackbirds. They are not yellow-winged blackbirds.
Who gives a damn whether he sees red-winged blackbirds?
Yeah. Well, they're yellow-winged blackbirds now, I guess, a new subspecies.
Yeah, that's great, Dad.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. So we were, we'll get back to what I was asking. What can you do about these feelings? Just throw out some stuff. You got these terrible feelings from these encounters. What were my options?
I think recognition is probably first thing to realize that this is not my dad, this is a disease.
Okay. Anybody else? What's a bad way to deal with it?
You're grieving, and I don't think you knew you were grieving. You were grieving the loss of your dad.
I knew I was grieving.
You did?
Yeah, we talked about that many times, but you're right. Exactly right. Well, the things I have written down here is you can do nothing. That's what we do with most of our problems. Hope they go away. And, you know, when he was getting fed, he wasn't kicked out of the place yet. Could have come to that point. Actually, they kicked out another guy, basically for being sarcastic. My dad would walk by him and say loudly, "Yep, nobody likes him." And he did get kicked out because of things he was saying to people. So I could do nothing, suffer with it, and continue to be miserable. You'll see people withdraw, not as much from a parent-child thing, but people. Actually, we have a dementia. A geriatric psych unit is part of our nursing home now. A third of our nursing home is a geriatric locked psych ward. And one of the patients I dealt with last month was a guy who his family had it with him. He was an alcoholic, but not drinking. He did some abusive things with kids, not sexually abusive, but just took advantage of them. And they walked away, and there was some kindly neighbors that were taking care of him. And he took them to their limits, so he was in the psych unit, and they were finding placement for him. So let somebody else deal with them and forget about them. And finally, the main thing you have to do is deal with it in an adult way.
Well, you shouldn't argue with him, probably. You can't win. I shouldn't argue with him. You're not going to win. An irrational person.
Why is it so tough to argue with these people as opposed to arguing with your kids or your neighbors or your fellow parishioners? Have we ever had an argument, Paul?
No, but I got an answer to that. What I thought of with my dad is that I didn't want to argue with him about money was the issue for him, and I told some people that he got a lot of money stolen from him. He had already so much taken away. I didn't want to take away his checkbook.
Yeah.
He can't drive. He's not at home. His wife is gone. My mom. And I couldn't do it. And it cost us $10,000.
And maybe that was worth it.
Yeah. Might have been.
I would have had the same feelings about taking the car away. I mean, we wanted to and didn't. It was forced on us. But he had loss of the house, loss of the stuff he used to do, loss of going to church. Most of these people are going through a lot of losses. Any other thoughts? Why are these arguments, these relationships, harder than some of the other? Like at work.
So to me, you don't have the authority, or your whole life you've spent without the authority to argue with him. You were the child. He was there.
Well, there's no opportunity for reasoning. No sense that what you're saying makes sense.
I think too that that we're already stressed out with our own lives.
Oh, very much so.
You know, we're trying to keep our lives together, keep our families together, and then all of a sudden, this seems like it's being dumped on you.
Yeah.
And you're not prepared.
How many of us have lives where you think, "Geez, I don't have enough to do"? There are a few people like that.
Yeah.
Probably nobody in this room, and only. It's a good thing it doesn't happen in our culture when you have little kids at home. Because I at least didn't have that. I got an empty nest for a couple of years now. That made it a little easier. But you're exactly right. And I forget, Dinah's dad is
Ken.
I paid him too. This is my brilliant statement. I want this. I want my name in a textbook someday with this. There's a part of you that cannot accept the fact that your parent has dementia and thus still or always responds to them as the parent you respected, loved, and obeyed. I'm still Tommy, and he's still Dad. I never call him Ben. And when he yells at me, I'm 9 years old. Maybe 5 years old.
Tom, that's interesting. My son went to see my dad, and Dad said, "I can't do that." And my son said, "Yeah, you can. Let's go." I would have done that. Oh, okay. Can't do that. And David just said, "No, we're going."
Yeah.
And Dan did it. He went.
They were off to do something.
Just go out to eat. But it's not too much trouble.
Yeah.
Not with David. Maybe he liked David better than me.
He loved both those boys.
Yeah.
I have a question. I don't want to get off the subject, but this might help a little bit. Is there a difference between being delusional and having dementia, or are they kind of the same thing?
Well, they can be different. I have a patient who has the Paul knows her, who has the delusion that her husband is cheating on her. They're in their early 80s, and he, like everybody else, or several people in Amy, goes and sits at that central table at the Cedarwood and has coffee most days of the week, and she's pretty sure he's going to cheat with this other woman who's a widow. And this has been going on, and you cannot talk her out of it. She finds evidence around the house that he's broken her jewelry. She finds a piece of broken jewelry. Well, he did that to get even with me.
So does she have dementia?
She does have dementia. In her case, it's dementia that's causing it. There are people with psychiatric conditions that are younger that have a fixed delusion that don't have dementia. So dementia people, well, my dad has this delusion that he had this meeting with 8 or 10 people and everybody was laughing at him. And what happened was that he had a meeting with 2 people, and at some point, we laugh often when something is ridiculous. Ben, that's not going to work. And that's what he was perceiving as them laughing at him. So that's a delusion to a certain extent. They don't think straight. So, and it's really difficult as a physician to sort it out sometimes. That's what we have psychiatrists for. It's been interesting to watch these, and they're almost all people with dementia in this geriatric psych unit, and the psychiatrist mostly throws meds at them. But what I think makes a difference is we're taking them out of their environment and giving them one-to-one attention. That's what helps these people more than them. I don't have a lot of faith in the medications. I mean, I think they help. But.
So I noticed that my mother, when she gets away from this care unit, where she is, she can be with a family gathering. But and we've always had a very close family. She loves her family, don't get me wrong. But she gets, she's ready to go back pretty early sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially
isn't that weird?
Especially if it gets noisy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of grandkids and great grandkids for her, and if it gets a little noisy, she's, I don't know if the noise confuses her maybe. But
my dad used to come up for all day, and then he'd come up, he'd drive 2 hours to stay for 90 minutes. We'd have dinner, and then he'd want to go home. He drove with my sister to Sioux Falls, which is 4 or 5 hours, and they had dinner. He said, well, I think maybe we should go home now. You know, after a 5 hour drive, spend an hour and drive home. Does she fall asleep in front of people?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Better now. They got her on some kind of
electrolytes,
and I can't remember what they identified something missing.
Mm.
And so she's drinking electrolytes now, and so now she's staying awake all day.
Uh-huh. That's him falling asleep in a family gathering was the first time where I said, "Oh boy, things are changing. Our life is not the same." And the first thing I came up with is that we're stuck in this relationship. You're not going to get rid of it. Unless you have a lot of siblings, you're going to really have to deal with it. You're stuck in this lifelong relationship which has been turned upside down. Our earliest, your firmest relationship, remember that when you were a little kid, your mom and dad, whatever your memory was, my first memory is my mom having a baby who was my sister who was 2 3/4 years older than me, or younger than me. And I can remember several things for that, and mom and dad were there. And they were tall people. We were talking about meek people in Stacy's Bible study, and we had a very wonderful high school gymnastics coach who was a meek person. He knew how to use power. He died this fall. And so all these 30 years of gymnastics were there. And I saw these people I hadn't seen since high school, which was, I can't believe it, 39 years ago. And there was this, I was looking for this guy that was a great gymnast 3 or 4 years ahead of me. We just worshipped him. This little short guy goes walking by, and I said, who's that? Well, that's Tony Dardeschi. Well, I thought he was really tall, you know, but I knew him when I was in 6th grade. So things change. So our earliest, firmest relationship and the one you've relied on your whole life. Who could you always go and talk to unless it's a terrible relationship? Those depend. And so we revert to the types of behavior and coping we use as children, not as adults. And I don't feel like who I, you know, Dr. Bracken when I go and see my dad. I feel like Tommy. Two people call me Tommy, my best friend and my dad. I loved what my older sister said. She said, don't let him bother you. That's just the dementia talking. My younger sister said, yeah, but it's got dad's voice.
Yeah. That is a good quote.
He's so wise. So the first thing is because we're stuck in it. The other thing is we fear dementia. You know, both my paternal grandparents had it. My dad's got it. Jeez, I don't want that to happen. Although, you know, he's pretty happy. It's okay, he gets up, he does what he wants to do, he watches the Minnesota Twins, drinks a child's portion of brandy before he goes to bed at night, doesn't have to worry about anything much. He does worry about some things. One of my friends had a cold and he was just terribly worried. How are they doing? And one of my best friend's wife had cancer and he's been praying for her. She's been fine for months. We don't understand it, we don't know where it's going, we're so afraid it's going to get us. And because we don't know how to cope with our feelings. So, one thing you can do is change your feelings. Is that possible?
Yes. You can try.
Ken says yes. Chuck says maybe.
You can let go of something.
Yeah.
You could feel it and then you say, let me see.
It's the one thing you have some control over.
Yeah.
Zarko?
Yeah.
No, I feel the same way. I believe that. I feel we can separate ourselves from our emotions and then deal with the task at hand.
That doesn't make it easy,
however. No.
Yeah.
No.
My initial response to the question, can you change your emotions, I guess I had been taught or felt you couldn't. They're there. They're kind of reality. That well, before I did some of this reading, and I think it was this book. If you, and I didn't have the books to order this, but Coping with Alzheimer's by Rosa Auber talks a lot about it. And if you think about it, we constantly carry on internal conversations with ourselves regarding challenging situations. We have that internal dialogue. So if we carry a conversation on with ourselves, it depends what you say. And if you pay attention to it, so with the Christmas check episode, here's the stuff I was saying. I can't stand it. He is so mean to me. And actually, he's been a little tough on me. You bonehead has come up many a time in my life. He's not been the most supportive person. He's proud of me, he loves me, but I don't get a ton of support. It's not fair. Why has he always treated me like a bonehead? Feelings of anger and self-pity. So that drove me to tears and walking out of the room and not dealing with it. Not terribly helpful. Let's contrast it with that. The same feelings start to rise and I say to myself, boy, he's having more trouble. He seems afraid of any task. He really needs a lot of help. Those are feelings of concern and love. And my wife, who is, some people in this room know, is a wonderful, wise person. And when we walked out, I said, what did you think about that? And she didn't say, geez, you must be mad. She says, boy, he really needs a lot of help and he's afraid. I didn't see him as afraid. She said, he was terrified writing out those checks. That's how I saw it. Not surprising me that she got it right.
Don't you think though somebody that's offset from the situation slightly would have a...
Oh, my yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why. Plus, she's smarter. Paul and Jeannie know that. And Mac had us... where did it go? Oh, I put it back. Since anger is usually generated by our insistence that the world and its inhabitants conform to our expectations, we can damp down our anger by giving up these unrealistic demands. So, should I really be surprised the next time when Dad and I argue about paying the Discover bill? I should expect it. And was it Eugenia that said I should obviously just, somebody said I should, or Rob, I guess, I should have it taken care of. It should come to my address. And when he moved to our town, my sister, the number two sister who gets things done, no nonsense, she called every one of his companies that he deals with and got all the addresses changed so that everything's coming to my house or everything is the way it can be dealt with.
I think it's really hard to punish yourself by saying that your demands are and your expectations are unrealistic, because they really are. And you were talking about, can you dismiss your emotions? And I don't think you really can dismiss your emotions, but they can be signals about what's going on with you.
Yeah.
And
you can alter your response to them. You can alter which road you're going to travel down from there.
Exactly. You can say that, that anger is, that's what's going on with me, and this is what caused it. And then you have some control over your response. I think you're exactly right on.
And how many of you watched The Office and Andy on The Office put his fist through a wall and had to go to anger management? And when he came back, some of his coworkers would taunt him to see if they could get him mad again. And he'd grit his teeth and he'd say, "Oh, I'm the new Andy." Or he had, you could see him, and he, of course, he would do it out loud so that you could hear it on the television show. This wasn't internal, otherwise he wouldn't know about it. And he would talk out how he was going to respond in a different way than he used to.
Call himself Drew.
Yeah, the new person.
Hey, he's in my office.
You have a guy like Andy?
Oh, yeah. What a change, though. Ooh. You can do it.
Yeah. Oh, your office changed.
Oh, yeah.
So don't be surprised when their behavior happens. Be surprised, and be surprised when things go well. Accept the fact that their minds will not give you what you used to expect, and you won't be so shocked when the unexpected occurs. They might get angry at you. They can't change. They can't do these things that we're doing. Only you can.
So you said in your unrealistic demands, I guess I'm thinking that maybe that ought to say out-of-date demands.
That's a better way to put it, yeah. That's very good. Okay, so we got through all that. And deal with your shame and guilt. I like this quote from that book. I was ashamed of my father's behavior. I was mortified. When we were making this decision, who's going to get him? Geez, I work in Minneapolis a day a month, and I always look forward to it. We go out to the... How many of you have seen Fargo?
The movie?
Yeah. You remember the scene where they drive up to interview the hookers in the bar? Marge, she drives up this snow-covered driveway to this bar, goes in and she interviews the hookers that were with the bad guys the day before. That's my dad's bar in Wilmerny, Minnesota, by Wiper Lake. And they filmed the outside of it and they used it for Fargo. And I've been there, I don't know, 200 times, 300, 500. And they knew Dad and they looked after him after Mom died, and they sent home cookies with him and soup. And the inside is... They used a movie set for the inside, but that's my dad's bar, the lakeside. And so I look forward to being with Dad. But it had gotten to the point, as I mentioned, when I took him out, things weren't always so good. Actually, the lakeside, they were pretty good, because it was his old familiar haunts, and they knew what he walked in, they'd bring him a big tumbler of Bombay gin. And they knew what he wanted to eat. But at other places, when he wasn't familiar, it wasn't near as comfortable. Well, I'm going to bring this guy into my community. I'm far from revered. I'm just a person in my community. But, gosh, it's embarrassing to walk around with him. I thought it would be. What would people think about me when they saw his disheveled appearance? Would they think I was from kind of a slovenly family? Would they think I was a rotten son for not taking care of him? So I was ashamed about it. And my wife, River the Wise One, said, "You know, I think your co-workers respect you, and they're going to love your dad, and if anything, give him a little extra treatment." And you know Kim, don't you, Stott, and Elaine Biker? they've been just wonderful with him, and he loves it.
So
I become attached to them.
So my wife does a feeding program on Thursdays. It's a free meal in the community.
Yeah.
She organizes it, and there is several group homes of developmentally disabled adults in their 80s, maybe a lot of them, and 70s to 80s. And when they're in there, they would be maybe a little disruptive if you took them to a restaurant or something. You know, there's one that's got his arm up here, makes noise, and the other guy leans over. And of course, this is a place they can come, and there's a lot of people that are not probably real educated people that are in there, but they treat these people with respect. They treat them very well, and the caregivers that are there with them are not treated like, you know, can't you do better than this in any way. They're treated like, whoa, look what they're doing, this is great. And I suspect, you may not see it, but I suspect that people are doing that. Whoa, that guy's got his hands full, look at him.
And that's possible, yeah.
I think if you watch for it, I think you'll find that.
Yeah. Well, but I have to recognize also legitimacy, the feeling I was wondering if I really wanted to put up with this. I also was wondering if I want to put up with the work. And I was just, it hit me yesterday talking about this stuff. All I know is today I was watching this, we're not going to have time for it, this movie Peach. I don't know how many of you have seen that. It's a great movie about a family that goes to visit grandma. And she's in the nursing home. She can't see. She doesn't talk much. Fairly demented. And I was thinking, yeah, maybe Dad's going to end up in my nursing home like this. What will that be like? That's going to be tough. What were you going to say, Paul?
I don't know, generalization. I think it's easier for other people to let... My dad didn't have Alzheimer's, but he just was old. He couldn't see as well, couldn't hear as well. He had some bowel problems. It's easier for other people to let him grow old than it is for me.
Yeah.
Dad, don't...
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't say that to him ever, but I didn't want this to happen. And, but I watched our friends and you come in to talk to him, and it was kind of okay. Like, Dad, you can do it. No, let him be. That was a hard road for me to walk. That, hey, he's old, and let him tell you he doesn't want to go to the concert.
I have a high school friend. I was having coffee with a high school friend last week, and he said, you know, I've always thought, or he's thinking more and more, that we should have a network of people with elderly parents, and we just agree to go see somebody else's parent one time a month.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, you laugh at the jokes, they're delightful, you draw them out. You don't say, that's the fifth time you said that. You don't, you know. So it kind of changes the dynamic, and I thought, wow, that's a really good idea. Maybe this is the time where we get to know someone else's parent and draw them out.
See, Paul and Jeannie would come to Onamia every Thanksgiving, and we... You know, we usually see each other, and I don't see any reason for that to stop just because they don't have any relatives in Onamia anymore. I think they should still keep coming. I'm pretty much planning on it.
Serve pizza.
You realize that you're taking control of behavior that you can't control. Dad's become really sarcastic. He thinks he's really funny. One of the other members at the assisted living was out with a shoulder injury. Somebody said, well, what happened to him? And my dad said, well, he was trying to wipe his butt with his elbow. I just, you know, none of you laughed at that. I didn't think it was funny at all. And he said, yeah, several people thought that was really funny. But what I'm hearing from these people, oh, yeah, we love your dad. I just can't believe it. So don't think of what people will think of you. Think of what they will think of the demented person. And what they'll think of is, this is a demented person. We shouldn't derive our status from what people think of your demented parent. You were talking about those people acting up in the audience or the restaurant. I've seen it, I'm sure Paul and Carol have seen it many more times in worship here. We've had, a few times I've been here, some pretty outrageous statements coming from people that aren't really terribly socialized, you know. I remember when Martin Wells gave this long sermon, and it was kind of introspective, and it was all over, and this young man with autism said, that was boring. At the top of his lungs. That was good. You know, it was kind of boring. me, everybody likes my dad, and whereas I see his behavior as sarcastic, they say he's a character. So the final thing you can do is love them, which is where this, if we watch this video, we probably won't. Paul Olson gets mad if you go over.
So, you should, so if he's sarcastic, that tells me, really, there takes an amount of intellect to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got some intellect left. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
I wish he was stupid. It'd be a lot easier.
Yeah.
Tom? Tom? How old is your father?
He's 82.
And otherwise, how is his health? His heart?
He's got some emphysema, so he doesn't walk very fast. He's got a little arthritis, but nothing that's going to kill him soon.
So, yeah, so he's strong.
Yeah. He's... He got to be friends with Henry, and Henry is 91 and a go-getter. He went out and he got all the gardens set up, and he set up bird feeders, and he's doing stuff at church, and he's got other plans, and he's not a tinge of dementia that I can see. And Henry put up a suet feeder for the woodpeckers that's a little higher than you couldn't put up with just your hand. You can reach it to kind of flick it off. And Dad was worried, we ran out of suet, and now he's obsessed with feeding these woodpeckers. Said, okay, Dad, I'll go out and fix it. No. I'm going to go out there with a ladder because I've learned how to fall. I said, no, Dad, I don't want you to do that. I'll go out and do it. No, you haven't learned how to fall. So that was his, he just doesn't have judgment like he should. And obviously, he should not be climbing ladders because he'll break something if he falls. So they don't have good sense about what they can and can't do. The other thing that happened to him is he never interferes in people's affairs. He doesn't interfere in our affairs. I try to tell him something emotional, and, I don't want to hear about that. That's your business. And somebody in the other assisted living, this woman, how did it go? This woman got him to go talk to this man because he wasn't giving her enough attention. He got caught in this love triangle. And the guy yelled at him and hit him, and they had to get him out of this. I think they eventually dealt with the woman, but she manipulated him. It wasn't huge consequences, but something he never would have done.
So is your mom gone?
She's been gone for 15 years with cancer.
So he would certainly be probably easily led by this woman.
There's a gal in his assisted living now that fell in love with a guy that was a little demented, and I'm going to keep my eye on that.
So,
I think one of the saddest things about this illness is you lose your loved one inch by inch. It's not like a death where you lose them and it's over.
Sometimes grieving is easier because you've done some of it already. Well, this more than I do. Sometimes it's harder, and I can't predict how the grieving's going to be. I think it'll be easier.
You're already grieving. That's what you're saying.
His life has so much less meaning than it used to have. It wasn't all the meaning I would have selected for my life.
But he had a full life. He lived his life.
Yeah, he's had a full life. He can't complain about that. If he died today, nobody would say, he missed out on this
there
or that.
There you go.
Yeah. But see, great-grandchild.
That's where you find your gratitude right there.
Yeah. And the final kind of subject is, what should you do with people with dementia? You should love them. And this movie, I suppose there might be a way to watch it. I'll have to talk about that. They come at Christmas and they awkwardly try to love her. They brought her a couple presents, which you can't see. And they open her, they describe the present, describe the box, and she feels it. And the grandsons kind of awkwardly say what they're doing with their lives. And while this is going on, the one grandson's, they're showing you flashbacks of this vibrant, almost ADHD kind of person doing things with him and just having a blast with him, just a really frisky grandma. So we called one of my other grandmas, I called her the frisky grandma. And I'll tell you at the end what the one grandson does. Then they decided, well, this isn't going anywhere, she's hard, and she says yes or no, I remember, I don't remember. She doesn't really carry on a conversation. They leave and the grandson comes back. Have you seen that movie, Jim? So people with dementia have lost their connection to the past and they have difficulty planning for the future. It's pretty easy. What do they have left? They have now, exactly right. They have the present. They live in the present. So you have to keep them involved. Invite them, take them to family gatherings. We brought Dad to my in-laws. They just live a mile away. They did. They had a Christmas gathering. And he went in, and I was embarrassed because he looked kind of bad. My grandson was there. He was delighted to see him, though he doesn't do anything with him. He just, oh, that was so great. I got to see Sam. And he sat and talked with my brother-in-law, the jerk. I didn't mean to say that. A couple days later, he said, you know, that was a great doing. That was a great time. I really enjoyed being there. So take them to family gatherings, dinners, holidays, and at first you do it completely. You have the whole shebang and let them suffer through the whole thing with you. By the way, don't expect to have the focus of your life be in fruition at family gatherings, especially family vacations. Just something I'm sharing as a human being with you. Grandparents or not, we put too much expectation. Dinners, holidays, and then as the gatherings, as your dementia gets worse, and just for part of it, and eventually you have to bring it to them, and that's what the people in the movie did. Friends, bring them to their friends or bring their friends to them. I mentioned yesterday his little friends, his golfing buddies, who he would first go out and play golf with. He was a terrible golfer, but he really liked going out to eat and having a beer. And eventually, for some reason, he quit golfing. He won't talk about it. I don't know what happened. But they still went out to eat. And these guys wanted to come visit him, and he called it off. It was too complicated. I got to find out what happened with that. I have to call him. My sister's got the numbers. Who was I talking with music about today? Somebody at lunch was talking about music. Keep them supplied with the music they've loved in the past. Patients with severe dementia, they may not have lost their music memory. It's not necessarily stored where, with their knowledge of the periodic table and the order of the books in the Bible. It's stored in other places, especially motor memory. And several times I've taken demented patients to a piano and they can play. Mm-hmm. Or even if they can't talk, they can sing. Occupational therapists know that. Yeah, you can just try it, and it's not a miracle. You'll see a movie where it's a miracle and everything's fine. It's not a miracle, but it's something they enjoy, and what do we always do in nursing homes is they play music. And I hope that the therapists keep track of what cohort of people they have, so that when we're there, it's the Beatles and Crosby, Stills, and Nash and AC/DC, and they're not playing, you know, Bicycle Built for Two and all that junk, because that's... I've seen that too many times, and I worry when I watch what... We have really good activities people in our nursing home. I worry when I see them dressed up like clowns and stuff. They're not little kids. Some of that stuff they really enjoy. We had a lot of the people brought in farm animals, and I was just... My dad enjoyed it. I thought he would never enjoy it. It's kind of childish, like the petting zoo, you know, but he kind of got a kick out of going out and seeing them. Reminiscing is the best, and I had, when we went through all this stuff from our family fire, all these photo albums, and we are the repository since about literally 1850. This stuff is filtered down to my house and now my attic, and there are some fascinating stories that I'm not going to bore you with. But I had a very old photo album, and Dad was driving me nuts. What do you got there? What page is that? So finally we sat down side by side and we looked at it together. And of course he remembered who everybody was. And we had that was a pleasant time, and that was the old Dad, not the new Dad.
And usually people's memories are way better for way back there than they are when they have the lunch.
And in the movie, I'm gonna do these next two. Church. Bring them to church or bring church to them. And again, I'm angry at the Presbyterian minister for not coming to death. And touch them. Hug them, love them, massage them, foot massage. And in the movie, what happens, and I was just sitting down in the basement of Chalet 2 this morning crying, tears running down my face, was the grandson comes in, and we do it now, puts his arm around her. Everybody else stood about the distance I am from you guys. And they'd come up and they gave her a kiss and they'd go back. And they weren't bad. They made the wife look pretty cold. The dad was the dad from Father Knows Best. I forget that guy's name. Yeah, no, it wasn't him. I don't know which. It was, you'd recognize him. Anyway, they go in and then they move back because they were kind of afraid. And she had a catheter. She dropped the cookie on the floor. She obviously was incompetent. But the grandsons, they're walking out. The grandson says, "Wait just a minute. I'll be a minute." And the oldest grandson comes in, puts his arm around her, and he says, "Nana, you remember?" And he talked about things like that. But she didn't say much. She said, "I remember." And he got in a little closer, kind of his head on his shoulder. "Do you remember, Nana, when we did this or that?" "I remember." No big change. He didn't go for the Hollywood moment. She didn't stand up and walk and start singing. And then he told her another story. "Nana, do you remember?" And then, yeah, I need to do this. He told her that he would always think of her and pray for her. And every day he thought about her. And that didn't do anything. I thought, gosh, I'd seen this movie 30 years ago. And after he left, they did go for the Hollywood moment. She smiled. That was it. That's all we got out of it. She smiled that he had touched her. The first family touched her, too. But he really touched her. So they may not remember yesterday, but they remember the old days. They may not be able to make music, but they can still hear it. They may not be able to express love, but they can still receive it, and they need it. They may not be able to make plans for tomorrow, but they can enjoy today. And the last thing I had of my main topics to cover is you need to take care of yourself. You can't do it all. I had to rely on people when I left. I've identified people at home. Leonard's one of them. You know, Leonard's trying to do with my dad what he did with your dad. And he stopped by. Leonard would always take Paul's dad out for breakfast. I went with him once. And he asked my dad if he wants to go out for breakfast. And they're the same age. But Leonard does not have dementia. I played this song with the cancer. It was written about Bono of U2 wrote this about his dad who has cancer and was dying. But I found it comforting with dad with his. And I'd like Dad to listen to this, but I don't think he'd get it. You know, I was just thinking here there's a word that we don't say often enough at Holden, I think, and that word is love. And that's really what it's all about, you know? What do you love? You love your parents. Hopefully they love you. And that's where it all comes from. Any closing thoughts? Well, thank you very much for coming.
We love you.